Who's up there?
Cougar and Merlin and Maverick and Goose.
Great. Maverick and Goose.
Maverick.
It's not your flying. It's your attitude. The enemy's dangerous. But right now, you're worse than the enemy. You're dangerous and foolish. You may not like the guys flying with you. They may not like you. But whose side are you on?
Yeah, it's Action Movie Rewind Friday here. It's a loaded Friday show on Mackie and Judd. And we're going to dive in to Top Gun later in this episode. And egregiously, I have never seen it until this week.
Me neither.
Declan has never seen it.
Two-thirds of us.
I mean, I don't even know what to say. I don't have any excuses.
We'll get to it.
But this is going to be amazing. Also, Judd's keys to a Vikings victory, and we'll break down some Twins action, even though they didn't play last night. Some meaningful things happened that pertained to the Twins last night, but a quick word about Federated Mutual Insurance Company. When you partner with Federated, you get more than just a policy. You benefit from over a century of experience in making businesses as successful as they can be. Make sure you follow Federated on Twitter as well, at FederatedINS. Great content for your business on all aspects of business protection. At Federated Insurance, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
You know, giving ourselves a chance to stay on the field for 70, 75 plays instead of 50 football plays, I think it's going to make us a much better offensive football team and help our football team. So that's a point of emphasis. And to do that, you just got to play better. You know, I got to coach better, and we got to do a better job. So that's what we're trying to do. You know, it's hard to play from back there in the hole, but we got to find a way to get the ball out when we're in that situation and stay on the field. And, you know, if we can do that, you know, we're going to play a lot better. So hopefully the script changes this week and we can be much more consistent as a offensive football team.
Gary Kubiak, Vikings offensive coordinator, Vikings Titans this weekend. And if the season isn't already sort of in the tank, well, they better win this weekend because there's a lot of 0-2 evidence. Even with, I will say that like a lot of this 0-2, you know, percentage chance that you can make the playoffs, those statistics, those will change now that there's a seventh playoff team. But we'll go through it. And also Purple Daily, you can find us 5 days a week and also two episodes on the weekends during the football season. And Vikings Vent Line right after the game is over on Score North Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast. So that's what's on the menu here. But Judd Zulgad.
Yes, sir.
Has Keys even shown his face this week after what has happened the first 2 weeks?
Keys is mortified and actively shopping his services to different stations and teams.
You don't say.
He's talked to the Bears. He's talked to the Packers, of course.
Wow. Bears are 2-0.
Yeah. He called the Patriots. I didn't realize.
The Cardinals?
Keys and Belichick are buddies.
Are you saying Keys?
I didn't realize that.
Is thinking about being with the Boom? He's been talking to other stations?
Yeah, Keys
wow.
is. Oh, Keys is mercenary.
Wow.
Oh, he doesn't. Keys never cared about
this
us.
Isn't Detroit Keys. This is. Know,
I could actually
else.
See. Well,
actually,
Keys,
talk to Detroit. Unfortunately.
Listen, the afternoon drive slot on the Score in Chicago is wide open right now. They just fired a guy. Could it be Keys in afternoon drive? Keys to a Bears victory.
Let me tell you right.
On the Score.
Let
in
me
Chicago?
Tell you this right now, and this comes third hand, okay? But I got a text a couple days ago, and I didn't want to upset you guys, but I'll tell you now. I got a text a couple days ago saying he's as good as gone.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
Yep. I don't know anything else.
You talked to somebody close to Keys?
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, it was a third party and said Keys is as good as gone. But anyway, Keys did get me, after negotiations fell through, Keys did get me a list here of keys to Sunday's game.
All right. How many keys did Keys bring?
Much like last week, he is going with four. He will up it back to five if and when the Vikings, in his opinion, well, if he's still here, and if and when they deserve such of accolades as to have
all right
five of them.
So these are Judd's keys to a Vikings win over the Tennessee Titans.
All right, so the Vikings 0-2. Some of this from Keys looks like it's a little bit like last week, but that's not surprising because the Vikings have stunk so far, so these are pretty simple things that they must improve upon and or do on Sunday in front of no fans against the Titans at U.S. Bank Stadium. Key number four, so I will work my way up. Get him cooking? Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
The Jacksonville Jaguars ran for 165 yards, averaging 6.1 yards per carry against the Tennessee Titans last week, okay? So clearly the Titans' run defense leaves something to be desired. So far in two games, Dalvin Cook has 26 carries for 113 yards, and he has caught three passes for a grand total of 6 yards.
Yeah.
So I would say, so as Coop sort of like goes through, well, I'm not doing enough for Kirk and I got to do more for Kirk. We probably think of that more as the passing game because that's Kirk's forte, obviously, as the quarterback of the team. But really, it's not just the passing game. It is the running game. And it is also the short passing game, which we will get to as well. But this should not be, but you just paid Dalvin Cook a large amount of money to be a star player. You did not pay him a large amount to have an average of 13 carries per game through two games and three catches. Get him cooking.
I like where you're going with this. I think sometimes it's funny when like an offense is sputtering, and oftentimes the first thing that you hear, like whether it's from the fan base or whatever, is why don't they throw more screen passes, right? It's always one of the first complaints, like, my team doesn't throw enough screen passes. But legitimately, I would say you should probably throw some screens, like whatever it takes to just
right.
start whatever your game planning is. Who are your most impactful weapons on offense? To me, it's Adam Thielen, Dalvin Cook, and probably some sort of a tie between Justin Jefferson. I like what I've seen in limited, targets so far. And Irv Smith, they tried to get the ball to Irv Smith last week. He had 5 targets. One was almost a pick six. So they did try to make an effort to get the ball to Irv Smith, but just the timing was off and there was a bad throw in there. But whatever you have to do to get the ball to Thielen and Dalvin Cook and then some of these secondary weapons would be a good idea. So, all right, Judd's third key.
Key number three. Key number three that he gave me was very, very simple. Time to earn your keep. And yes, we are talking to Kirk Cousins. Mm. All right. I feel like we are again going to go into this. How much can we blame Kirk? Can we really blame Kirk? The offensive line's not good. Can we blame Kirk? Can we blame Kirk? I mean, the offense is struggling, but can we blame Kirk? It's Gary's fault. Gary just admitted today that it's his fault or yesterday. All right. That's a conversation, but absolution's not coming. Absolution is not possible. When you pay a guy this much, like, think about this. Think about what Kirk's salary is and what the expectations for Kirk are. And then think about the quarterbacks who are probably in the same boat. Do you see them being like, well, the offensive line's not very good, so I guess I can't do it. Kirk Cousins in the first two games, all right, he has a QBR that's 31st. 31st, there's 32 teams in the National Football League. It's 31.2. He is currently, I believe his passer rating against the Colts was 15.9 or something like that. He is currently last in the National Football League with a passer rating of 61.9. He has what? 4 picks through two games?
He had 6 last year, the whole season.
Exactly. He is near, I think he is tied currently for atop the league, which is not a good thing, in picks. Earn your keep. And here's the thing. Your team might lose. Like, the defense might just stink, okay? But you got to pass the eye test. You have to. It's not an option here. And if everything breaks down around you, you still have to pass the eye test. And you haven't yet. So I can see having conversations about where the Vikings are. I can see having long conversations about the fact that the defense appears to not be good for the first time under Zim. But the quarterback has to pass the eye test. And he's not coming close. And you can't possibly really think that you can say, well, yeah, but just not his fault.
It's also worth noting, so there's a couple different conflicting pieces of evidence here when it comes to the offensive line and how much to blame Kirk versus offensive line for just the mediocre passing so far. Declan found a stat. Where was it from? The time to throw stat.
Next gen stats.
He said the third longest time to throw behind only, was it Deshaun Watson?
It was Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield.
Okay. So He's had over 3 seconds on average to throw. Now, some of that is like he has made a couple decent plays with his legs to get out and get in space. But he, for the most part, unlike, let's say, Lamar Jackson, who might create his own time to throw by just moving away from pressure, Kirk generally needs the offensive line to give him time to throw, and they've done that, at least according to Next Gen Stats. Now, Pro Football Focus has the Vikings offensive line, from a pass blocking perspective, in the bottom third of the league. So, I mean, it's only two games. There's some conflicting evidence there. But in general, I would agree with you in that, well, actually, I agree with you in that it's time to earn your keep. I like the headline there, Keys. That's very good.
No, he's worked hard at it.
But I think there's another train of thought here. I was watching, I think it was after week one, and Baker Mayfield was just a disaster in week one, and it was more of the same, and people were ripping him for being on all these commercials all Sunday, but you know, can't complete a pass. And they're debating this on Get Up with our friend Greeny on ESPN. Ryan Clark comes on. I love Ryan Clark.
Yeah, he's great.
He's awesome. And he comes on, and they're talking about, like, you know, Baker Mayfield, what's the matter with him? And, like, why this, why that? He's got these weapons. Is there friction between him and OBJ? And Ryan Clark gets on and says, this isn't Baker Mayfield's fault. This is our fault. Because we are the ones that pumped Baker Mayfield's tires and value, and he was a top pick, and he's not good enough to perform at the level that we expect from that position. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to us to change our expectations for Baker Mayfield. So we're sort of stuck here in that, yeah, like Kirk Cousins isn't Russell Wilson. He isn't Aaron Rodgers. He isn't Lamar Jackson. And so is it fair to judge him based on how much money he makes, or should we judge him based on what his actual upside is as a player?
If you are going to do that, though, then you've basically, it's imperative that you call for Spielman to be fired, because mm-hmm. the money he makes then becomes a massive, massive problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying that you have to do this, but if this is the train of thought, if you're going to go down that path, if a general manager so misjudged the quarterback's ability that when times get tough to lead and to actually, again, not saying he's got to win, but pass the eye test, play well. If Rick can't do that, then Rick can't work in this league. Like, that's the problem. Baker Mayfield's not paid yet, right?
Not yet.
So I'm willing to go down the, you know what? Might not work path. But as soon as you write that check, as soon as you say, you know what? We are committed to you. You are the guy. $66 million in Marchville for two more years. Then the blame has to go somewhere.
It's
got to go somewhere.
And for me, it's not the first check. I'm okay with the first check, the check from 3 years ago.
I tend to agree with you on that check. Yeah.
Or 2 years ago.
I tend to agree.
I am not okay with the second check, even though it was partially a restructure or whatever. So, all right, key number two as we count down.
Key number two. Let's see. This is good, Keys. Very, very good. I'm going to miss you when you're at the Score in Chicago. Or not.
It's Parkins and Keys afternoons on the Score in Chicago.
Keys doesn't talk and he's drunk again. Keys, you can't handle the pressure of Chicago. You just dried out. Key number two.
Keys and the Mad Dog. Weekdays.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine Keys at WFAN?
Afternoon, Keys.
I love him. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, what do you think about that team? Go. Key number two. Hard pass.
Wow.
Wow. So I don't know if you guys have gandered at the Vikings injury report this week yet.
Yeah, it's all cornerbacks.
But when it comes to the cornerbacks, Mike Hughes has not practiced, and I'm sure will not play because he's got a neck injury, which we haven't heard exactly what it is, but go back to the end of last year, and he suffered a broken vertebrae. And so if it's the neck, he might not play for a while. So let's just say he's going to be out on Sunday. Cam Dantzler continues to be out because of a rib injury that he suffered against the Packers. He has not practiced. He didn't play last week, and he's not practiced again this week, and so I'm assuming he's out. So Ryan Tannehill, who's turned himself, it looks like, into a good quarterback. Damn good.
Yes.
Six touchdown passes and no picks so far this season. It's going to be facing a secondary cornerback-wise that includes Jeff Gladney, first-round pick, but in fairness, very much a work in progress.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not 100%.
Holton Hill. And some combination of Harrison Hand and or Mark Fields II, because yesterday's injury report had Chris Boyd, who hadn't played yet, I don't think, in a game at corner this season, but was next man up on the depth chart. He must have hurt his hamstring at Wednesday's practice. So long story short, you're either going to be playing with a slowed Chris Boyd, and a full-speed Chris Boyd is probably questionable, or you're going to be playing with Harrison Hand or Mark Fields II. And I'm willing to bet if you went out on the street and surveyed just casual Viking fan and said, Mark Fields II, does he live next door to you or play corner for the Vikings? You'd get a lot of people being like, I'm sure he lives next door, right?
Harrison Hand sounds like a made-up movie football player.
Sounds like an action movie guy.
Or an action movie.
It's perfect for Friday, yeah. Gentlemen.
But it almost sounds like a player that was discussed by Kevin Costner in Draft Day or something, right? As the number one pick. Yeah, it's a problem.
Oh, God.
For sure. The Vikings so far, this is beautiful. Pro Football Focus is just, they're not very high on the Vikings. All right, let's just put it that way. The Vikings in coverage so far this season, actually, surprisingly, they're only sixth worst, but there's a lot of bad grades. There's a lot of teams are struggling in coverage this year, and I think part of it's just because that's a position that really requires getting integrated into the full speed of the NFL, and to just jump into week one, not having played football in like 9 months, is really tough. But the Vikings so far this season have a 47.1 Pro Football Focus grade in coverage on a 1 to 100 scale. So think about it like a real life Madden rating, a 47.1, which is god awful. The Las Vegas Raiders are the worst coverage team, but they're 2-0, so they've been able to score enough points.
Oh boy. Linebackers are a mess, right? Complete mess there.
Yeah,
they just signed a guy who played for the Broncos yesterday.
Point like going into the year, even though they were young at certain positions, cornerback, and they were integrating new players, and they were shorthanded, defensive tackle. You kind of thought, Mike Zimmer, of all coaches, like Mike Zimmer might be able to scheme around this a little bit. Not to create, the 1985 Bears defense, but he might be able to scheme this into like a top 10 defense. I think we're beyond that point with the injuries now. Like, there's just no way, with Danielle Hunter out and with Anthony Barr out, and now you're down to Harrison Hand at cornerback. Like, you can't
no
scheme
Pierce.
This.
No Pierce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to even blame Zimmer in terms of just, like, what he'll be able to do or not do. All right, key number one for a Vikings win over the Titans.
Key number one, because he cares about the young, Keys says, think of the kids, because you got to play the kids. And I'm not just talking about on defense, where you've been forced to play a guy like Gladney. But more importantly, Justin Jefferson has to get the ball way more. Like, this can't be Cousins drops back. Where's my best buddy Adam at? I'm going to look for Adam Thielen the entire day. Which, by the way, here's where I think that there's some fly in the ointment of Kubiak taking total blame. Don't you guys think that Gary Kubiak doesn't get in a room with Kirk and say, hey, Kirk, come here. What's up, Gary? I only want you to look for number 19. That's our little secret. They know Thielen is going to be bracketed, double covered, right? There is no way on God's green earth that a coordinator is going to, a veteran one is going to say, only look for one guy. So let's start with Jefferson, all right? Let's think of the kids. Let's think of the children. Let's get them involved. Let's incorporate them into the fun. Let's invite them to the Sunday afternoon picnic, all right? Like, you have to anyways. They're there. They're showing up. Whether you like that or not, it is just time to fully immerse yourself in any young players, I think, that you possibly can, because there's no downside to getting them the experience. What? Oh, my God, it might cost us the 7th playoff seed. Okay, that's cool. I don't care. So, anyway, think of the kids often.
And you're not going to have a choice.
No, right? I know, but like Jefferson, he's got to be incorporated as fully as you possibly can.
Yeah, and he, by the way, like,
again, which will help Thielen.
It's a small sample size alert here, but I test in the first couple games, and a couple of those catches I think were garbage time last week, but he looks the part to me.
I don't disagree.
He looks more the part than Laquon Treadwell did when you first saw him, and it was like, okay.
But that was also him behind Stephon Diggs and Thielen, right? And mm-hmm. So it was sort of like, well, Treadwell doesn't look that good, and guess what? It's not good, but you really don't care that much. This one you care about.
Yep. The number two wide receiver spot is wide open right now. I know B.C. Johnson technically is your number two wide receiver, but, like, B.C. Johnson's not Odell Beckham Jr. He's fine. Like, he's a good rotational receiver. Justin Jefferson has a much higher ceiling, so I think forcing the issue there would be a good idea. Keys, nice job. Great work. If this is the last time that Keys is part of
get off
Vikings
phone.
Keys to a win.
Oh, would you quit? You're really going to Green Bay?
No, he's bluffing.
Him trying to leverage this station is just so upsetting. Classic. Because we've been friends for so long.
Keys is bluffing. He'll be back for the Texans game for sure. Keys to stopping Deshaun Watson next week.
Don't flip Phil off. That's not nice. That's not nice, Keys. We don't do that.
All right, Keys. Have a good weekend.
Yep, bye.
Enjoy watching Red Zone Channel. We appreciate it. Corona Hard Seltzer has been busy organizing behind the scenes and cobbling together a really fun, cool package. We're calling it the Corona Hard Seltzer Ultimate Home Tailgate Party. And it is free to register to win a 65-inch TCL TV with a soundbar, $200 worth of Grunhofer's meats, and $100 to MGM Wine and Spirits, where you could maybe buy some Corona Hard Seltzer if you want to. And you can enter in one of two ways. Just go to scorenorth.com, SKORNorth.com, and click on the rewards tab at the top of the page, and you'll see the contest right there. And the other way to enter is to download the Score North app. It's free in the Apple and Google Play stores. You can just register your name and email in the Score North app. Make sure we know who you are and enter your credit card. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But enter through listener rewards and boom. That's how you can enter to win the Corona Hard Seltzer Ultimate Home Tailgate Party. Thanks to all of our great sponsors, Grunhofer's, MGM Wine and Spirits, TCL TVs. So, all right, Keys, great stuff. Awesome.
He left already.
You guys want to get into just a couple Twins things? I know they didn't play last night, so we're not going to break down a Twins game like it's football. A football game.
They didn't play, but there was movement.
Yes.
Including the White Sox, absolutely gagging. Nice classic, job. Nice man. Job, White Sox.
Classic.
Renteria, I believe, will not be in the dugout on opening day 2021.
Well, okay.
Really?
I don't know if I agree with that.
There's a lot of people very upset with his. And not really. He's sort of a hold the fort guy.
It wouldn't shock me, but let's unpack a couple things here real quick. So the most important thing is that the Twins are still in first place. They are in first place by a game now over the White Sox, and they have to remain a game in front of the White Sox because the White Sox own the divisional tiebreaker still, I believe. Yes. They do, right? Even though they got swept by Cleveland.
I believe you are correct.
And they have so the tiebreaker goes head to head with the Twins and the White Sox. If it's a 1-1 tiebreaker, it's head to head, and the Twins and the White Sox are both 5-5 against each other. So the next one is division record, and the White Sox have a better division record because they went like 18-2 against the Royals and the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
So that they are like 18-2 against the Royals and the Tigers, and they are 16-21 against the rest of the league, which tells me that it's not that the White Sox aren't legit. That's a great offense. They've got some great top end pitching and they have a great closer, but they're mostly feasting on these two crappy teams. And then when they face real teams, it's more of a fight. Mm-hmm. And even average teams, it's more of a fight. So to me, it just shows you that they're probably more like a year away from being actually relevant. They probably need a couple more relievers and maybe a different manager.
Yeah.
But that's still not a team I would really seek to play in the playoffs because they could score 8 runs on you and just end
your
time.
I just think that Renteria is the type of guy who probably struggles a little bit with pitching changes. He brought in, Rondon last night, and it completely blew up. And there, I guess, was not a compelling case to make the change. I just believe that with where the White Sox are going, which could be an extremely competitive team and very good in 2021, that you might want to upgrade the managerial position just a bit.
The Yankees also lost last night. And so here's where the Twins stand right now. If the playoffs started today, the Twins would be the 2 seed in the American League. They are 2 games behind the Rays for the top seed. So they're probably not going to get the top seed. But if the playoffs started today, they would actually play a 3-game series at Target Field against the Cleveland Indians.
So you really want that 3 seed. If you can get to that 3 seed, you really want that 3 seed, don't you?
You want the 3 seed, but you also don't want to risk not getting, like, you don't want to risk tumbling down. The good news, though, is the Twins have basically clinched home field.
Correct.
In the first round, right?
Yes.
Have they actually mathematically clinched it? They're 3 games up on New York.
They can't fall behind the Yankees now.
Yep. Yeah, the Twins are 3 games up on the Yankees. So
yes.
They're in no danger of not playing a home series.
Yes.
And so what could happen is, the Twins could stand pat at the 2 seed, and then they would play Cleveland because Cleveland's locked into the 7 seed.
Mm-hmm.
The 6, 7, and 8 are locked. Houston's locked as the 6. I guess the only thing that could happen is I believe the Angels could still catch Houston. They're like 3 back or something like that.
They're 3 back in the win column because it's Houston 29 wins, LA Angels 26 wins, and in the loss column, let me do it. They're 3 back as well.
So let's just say that unlikely scenario doesn't happen. Houston's locked as the 6. Cleveland's locked as the 7. Toronto's locked as the 8. So of those three, which would you rather play? Well, I'd rather play Houston.
It's not even close.
Because they're the worst of those three teams. The two hitters who were their best hitters don't know what pitches are coming and have been garbage hitters this season.
I won't sit here.
Justin Verlander's out for the year. So if you could, so what you need is the Twins are one. They're a half game up on Oakland. I'm assuming Oakland plays a doubleheader. They must play four games this weekend or something. They're a half game up on Oakland, and they're a full game up on the White Sox for the four. So a million things could still happen here, but I think the best case would be if Oakland passed the Twins and the Twins won the division still and stayed ahead of the White Sox.
Yes.
And they got settled into the three seed. I'm here for the chirping at that Astros dugout.
I can't wait.
Amazing. So
how fun is this whole thing though? Just like it's crazy, but it's great fun to watch.
It's very chaotic. Yes.
But I love it. The chaos is fantastic.
My tweak here, I stand by the format that I threw at you guys right when the season was starting. So I love the expanded playoffs. I would reduce to 7 playoff teams, and I would look to reward, because right now there's very little reward between the 1 and the 8 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your reward is sort of, you get to play the crapshoot 3-game series at home. Like, that's the reward.
Right.
And it's not a huge reward because home field advantage, it matters in baseball, but it doesn't matter as much as it does in football or basketball or even hockey to some extent. What I would do is I would cut the 8th playoff team out and I would have 7 playoff teams, 3 division champions, and they are rewarded by going straight to a 5-game divisional round series.
So they get a bye.
They all get a bye.
Okay.
The other 4 teams are entered into a wild card playoff. So it's like wild card week in Major League Baseball. And it would be those 4 teams, the 4 through 7 seeds, in a 4-team tournament. And the winner of that, and I'll explain this in a second, the winner of that 4-team tournament becomes the wild card winner. You win the wild card mini tournament. And then you enter the divisional round as the 4 seed against the 1 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would then have wild card 1 and 2, and wild card 3 and 4, wild card 1 and 2 would have to win 1 game against their opponent.
Yep.
The lower seed NBA. Wild card teams would have to win 2 games.
College baseball.
Exactly.
Similar to college baseball.
Yep. I just want to be able to rule. I don't want a team that finishes 500 in the same bin as a wild card team that wins 100 games.
By record then too?
Yes.
So instead
I see the wild cards by record.
Right. Instead of Division 2 or Division. Okay.
Yep. So the division winners, if you're 82-80 and you win the division, I don't care. You're a division winner, right?
Yep.
And if you're a 100 win wild card team, sorry, you didn't win your division. You're in the wild card playoff. But if I'm a 100 win wild card team and I'm the 1 seed in the wild card playoff, and the fourth wild card team is an 80 win team, I want the 100 win team to have some sort of an advantage over the 80 win team.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they enter a series. It's a mini series. The 100 win team wins once, it's over. The 80 win team has to win twice to win that series. And then you move on to the next one. This would take like 5 or 6 days to complete. And so the next question, first of all, it would be super fun. Major League Baseball could coin it wild card week, and it could just be like must watch, do or die games every single day for 5 or 6 days. And then you might wonder, well, what about the other teams that have to wait a week and get rusty? Well, you have to figure that out. If you want to do like a simulated game and bring in some of your minor league pitchers to throw, 7-inning games so your hitters stay sharp, that's on you to figure out.
I like it. They won't do it because I think they're going to fall in love with absolutely as many teams playing as possible.
Well, but I'm giving you 7.
No. But I'm saying you start the playoffs and they're all playing. So I think that baseball is going to for TV purposes, embrace the top teams playing as quickly as possible now.
Then what's the point of divisions, though? Like, what? Like,
what's that? I mean, yes, I agree with you. But
like in the National League,
I think
look
you're
at this.
Right. But I'm telling you, I'm pretty sure that they are going to like the fact that Fox gets the Yankees and teams like that immediately.
In the National League, the Dodgers are a 40-win team right now. So they're on pace to win like 100-something games. The San Francisco Giants are the 8 seed right now, and they're 28-28. And so they could conceivably be sub-500 and play a first-round series against the Dodgers, and it's a 3-game crapshoot.
Hey, listen, man, your sport has become hockey.
And I'm okay
Welcome to the club.
And here's the thing. I'm okay with crapshoots as long as if you win 100 games and win your division, you're not subjected to an immediate crapshoot.
Welcome to my sport.
But at least your sport plays a 7, like your sports are crapshoot in 7 games.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in your philosophy now, these sports are going to be the exact same. So the A's play four games this weekend against the Mariners, including a doubleheader on Saturday. The other thing to keep in mind that is interesting about Cleveland and the White Sox is the White Sox, I think, are going to play host to the Cubs in three games, and the Cubs are awful right now. Like, they just can't, they can't hit. But Cleveland gets three games against Pittsburgh, and let's see, the White Sox have 34 wins, Cleveland has 33, the White Sox have 23 defeats, Cleveland has 24. So I think there's a chance then that Cleveland, if the Cubs start to play decent baseball, which I'm doubting at this point, but if they do, I think they could leapfrog the White Sox and dump the White Sox into that 7 wild card.
Boy.
So the White Sox could come here if the Twins finish second.
That's another scenario that we hadn't even talked about. So there actually is a pretty good chance that let's say the Twins win 2 out of 3 this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and the A's don't catch them.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2 out of 3 probably solidifies the 2 seed, unless the A's obviously sweep through.
And the Mariners are done now. So
yep, if that happens and the White Sox continue to falter, then we're lining up for a White Sox Twins series. And so if you had to rank Houston, Cleveland, Toronto, White Sox, I'm going Houston, Toronto, White Sox. Cleveland would be my last choice just because Justin Bieber is ridiculous and it's a three-game series.
Shane Bieber.
Sorry. Justin's ridiculous.
It's the same.
Justin's talented. I mean, he's fine. I'm more of a Shane guy.
Canadian, though.
More of a Shane guy.
Big hockey guy.
More of a Shane guy.
Have you guys seen the Justin Bieber Netflix documentary?
No, I haven't.
No, I won't be seeing it.
I probably won't be either.
Yeah, you guys are
good. Good stuff.
It's a documentary.
Okay, I won't be saying it. The White Sox Twins, though, could be great fun.
Yeah.
Like, that could be really, really fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. Well, that's breaking down the Twins like their football, and the next time we do so...
Football.
Hey, do we potentially get Bauer on Sunday, then?
Yes. Morosi tweeted out... Morosi and the guys are actually at Target Field this weekend because YouTube is broadcasting some of these games.
Okay. Oh, they traveled.
Yeah, and Morosi said they have a contingency plan of Bauer can start on normal rest on Sunday, I believe, or they could throw Sonny on short rest on Sunday.
Hmm.
So they're debating how they want to do it. They have two guys locked in. Their back-end guys are pitching today and Saturday. And then they might throw Bauer or Sonny Gray on Sunday. Whoever probably doesn't throw, obviously, would start game one, assuming they wouldn't make the postseason.
Here's what's amazing about the playoff chase here. So there are right now three days to go, I guess, in the regular season. There's some teams that play doubleheaders. Only four teams have clinched a playoff spot in the National League. 1, 2, 3, 4. 8 teams are still alive for 4 spots in the National League this weekend.
Chaos, baby.
So that in itself, think about how fun that is.
Yeah.
I know. That's what I'm
awesome.
Saying.
Like, half the freaking league is playing for something this weekend.
What? But they're garbage teams.
I don't know. It's fun. Super fun. Yeah. Like, hockey and basketball are the same way.
Oh, it's garbage. Well, I don't know.
Like, the COVID teams,
Wolves Nuggets game from 2 years ago, that was awesome.
The COVID teams both might make the playoffs. The Cardinals are the COVID 5 seed right now.
Yeah.
Marlins are the 6 seed. They're probably going to make the playoffs.
They'd have to screw up pretty badly to not make the playoffs.
That was the key. Claim COVID. Nice long rest.
It's pretty good.
Well, started up on his 6 when he pulled through the clouds, and then I moved in above him.
Well, if you were directly above him, how could you see him?
Because I was inverted.
No, he was, man. It was a really great move. He was inverted.
You were in a 4G inverted dive with a MiG-28?
Yes, ma'am.
At what range?
No, about 2 meters.
Well, it's actually about 1.5, I think. I think it was 1.5. I've got a great Polaroid of it. And he's right there. Must be 1.5.
It was a nice picture.
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
You guys really are cowboys.
What's your problem, Kazansky?
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. Ice, man. I am dangerous.
People say that about Judd all the time.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I'm as short as Tom Cruise, too.
Zolgad.
Just a little guy.
This week's Action Movie Rewind, and just for the record, if you're new to the segment, we have been reviewing action movies pretty much every week since the pandemic started. And we said, yeah, this is such a fun segment, and it is regularly one of our two most downloaded shows every single week. Thank you guys for helping us on the Mackie and Judd podcast feed. That we're going to keep this around even during football season. And this week's action movie, I believe this is number 24 for us. The 1986 legendary classic, Top Gun.
You!
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit, you can be mine.
And inexplicably, this is the first time I've ever seen this movie. I've seen parts of it like on TV and
can
stuff.
We talk
it's the first time
this?
I've ever seen this movie.
I've heard the lineage and I've heard the character names. Like I've heard of Goose and Iceman and Maverick, but I've never seen it either.
All right. So on Declan, I'm not absolutely shocked. You're really young. There's a bunch of films. There's a bunch of films that you have not seen. I'm a little bit surprised. With Mackie, I'm flat out. How on earth? And this can't hold your Star Wars excuse because I get saying, well,
that does make
that type
sense.
Of film is not my type of film. I totally get that.
Yeah, excited.
But Phil, this checks every Macconian box there is on movies like this. But I mean, this I would have thought that this was one of your first films that made you fall in love with the films that you like.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I wish I could sit here and defend myself. Like, I don't have any defense.
I'm not looking for a defense. I'm floored.
You're looking for reasons?
Yeah, well, like, how could you not have seen or been steered to? And it's not like it's super violent or language would have caused a problem. Well,
but I love those things, too.
Yeah, he likes
things. But I'm saying, like, let's say when you were 8 or 9, you could have seen this.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't really know what to say because to make it worse, I love 80s culture. So I was born in 1985, so I didn't really, like, grow up, like, I guess I grew up in the 80s a little bit, but I'm more of a 90s and an early 2000s kid.
Right.
And so you would think when you ask me, like, so what's, like, your favorite movies and your favorite music and stuff?
And
like,
soundtracks?
Soundtracks. Like, ordinarily it would be, for someone born in 1985, it would be a lot of mid to late 90s stuff and early 2000s stuff, which I love that culture too. But 80s culture, I just always had a thing for 80s culture. I've always had a thing for Rocky movies, and I've always had a thing for 80s wrestling and, like, all these things that we've talked about for years on our show, right?
Yes.
And these late 80s, early 90s sitcoms were all my favorites, like Full House and Family Matters, like all that stuff. It's my wheelhouse, man.
I know.
And I somehow have never seen Top Gun.
I would have thought that the 90s, you would have worn out the soundtrack CD to Top Gun.
The first CDs I ever had were like Monsters of Rock, like 80s hair band, Bon Jovi. Like that's the music I listened to. And so actually, like, we'll get into all of this, but let's actually just tip our caps to the soundtrack of this movie, which I officially downloaded on Spotify last night.
Take my breath away.
This is a, okay, we don't need to sing it. This is a ridiculous soundtrack. It's one of the, like, most revered and amazing soundtracks.
Dawn had
movie history.
Bought it at the time.
You had Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone. You had a couple Kenny Loggins songs on here. You had, so just even like the bands, Take My Breath Away won, I believe it might have won an Oscar for best song. It won a ton of awards.
Playing with the Boys.
You also had, Otis Redding making a comeback here, sitting on the dock of the bay. You had all this, like, Otis. Righteous Brothers, You've Lost That Love and Feeling, like all this old music that made a comeback. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Loverboy, Tina Marie, Cheap Trick. So the end credit song, Mighty Wings by Cheap Trick. Great song.
Love Cheap Trick.
And you also had Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine in here, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's inexplicable.
Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire when Goose plays that in the bar.
So, all right, here's the summary. We'll set this up, and then we'll do our usual deep dive into this movie.
Yep.
So, the summary is, the Top Gun Naval Fighter Weapons School is where the best of the best train to refine their elite flying skills. When hotshot fighter pilot Maverick, Tom Cruise, is sent to the school, his reckless attitude and cocky demeanor put him at odds with the other pilots, especially the cool and collected Iceman, Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
But Maverick isn't only competing to be the top fighter pilot. He's also fighting for the attention of his beautiful flight instructor, Charlotte Blackwood. That's Kelly McGillis.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer, Anthony Edwards, Kelly McGillis, Meg Ryan making an appearance.
Meg Ryan.
In this
Love
movie.
Me some Meg Ryan.
Yep. 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, $15 million budget turned into $357 million at the box office. That's how directors and producers get rich. Movies like Top Gun.
Jerry Bruckheimer.
IMDb added, so they take all the, like, the critical reviews. This is not like a Roger Ebert special here. This is more of just a blockbuster fan favorite.
And so IMDb says the website's critical consensus, though it features some of the most memorable and electrifying aerial footage shot with an expert eye for action, Top Gun offers too little for non-adolescent viewers to chew on when its characters aren't in the air. Kind of craps on it. Which I say, that's perfect for Action Movie Rewind.
Yeah.
No, it fits the bill beyond belief.
Yes. So let's do our deep dive here, starting with Judd Zulgad. What is the thing that stood out most to you in Top Gun?
Actually, it's going to be two things. Music, one, because the soundtrack is, and I don't even like the entire soundtrack that much, but it's brilliant, okay? Like, it's a tip of the hat. They knew when to drop it in perfectly. The other thing that stands out is this. The film actually is not that long, and the ability to have basically continuous action and movement, to me, was fantastic. Like, name me in your guys' minds a big lull in this film, or like a lull where you're like, oh,
there are none.
Oh boy, it's getting boring now, or no. why, right? My big thing is, did you really need that scene? Like, just cut that scene out, right? I don't think Top Gun, and this is not saying it's brilliant in how it was written, but it was brilliant in how it was executed, I think. Because I don't think I can say there were a few scenes that you probably could have tightened up a little bit, but there was never a time where I sat on my couch and thought, all right, just end this scene. Yeah.
So one thing you'll notice, like, and this is going to be me going very highbrow thespian expert on you here. So Jerry Bruckheimer is the producer here, and Jerry Bruckheimer is probably the most accomplished and prominent action movie blockbuster producer of our lives. Like, he's literally worth like $1 billion based off of all these movies.
And TV,
like,
shows too. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
I think he was behind CSI and all this stuff, right?
Yes.
And Tony Scott was sort of his right hand man. Tony Scott was the director of this movie, and he also directed movies like Beverly Hills Cop 2, Days of Thunder, Crimson Tide, Enemy of the State, Spy Game, like all these huge movies. He hasn't really done anything. I don't think, is he still alive? I don't know. He hasn't done anything in like the last 10 years. He did die in 2012, which is why he hasn't done anything.
Okay.
That's tough when you're dead, right?
That's going to make it tough.
And one thing you'll notice with these guys is, and like, go back and watch some of their movies. I just watched Enemy of the State last week, just on a Friday night. It was on. They rarely go more than like 3 to 5 seconds without a camera cut. And so like when you think back to Top Gun, especially like the action scenes, the camera is cutting and jumping every 1 or 2 seconds. And so it just, like, it's an edge of your seat movie in the plot, but it's also an edge of your seat movie in that, like, they're literally just like cut, 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 cut. Like, it's frantic. And that's part of the reason why it doesn't feel like there's a lull. Cause they don't sit there in a room. Like when you watch a Quentin Tarantino movie, and those are great too.
Love Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino movies are like, there's like 5 scenes. And they just, it's like these long, drawn out scenes and dialogue. These are the opposite. Like, this is boom, 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 right. Boom. And it makes you feel like your adrenaline.
Top
pumping.
Gun knew its very purpose. Like, there was no confusion about, what are we doing here? Like, oh, yeah, what are we doing here? What's the that line? Let's change that line. Right. Like, this film, they went into production and they knew exactly, like, by the book, how it was going to go, which I applaud completely, because that's how you get a great action film.
So here's Bruckheimer's resume. All right. This is like, just when you think about the style and the edge of your seat and the upbeat nature and how there's just no lulls. Right. So there's a bunch of, in the 70s and 80s, he had a bunch that you probably never heard of. But then he starts to pick up into the mainstream, and movies like Flashdance come along in 1983. Beverly Hills Cop is a Bruckheimer movie. Top Gun, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Days of Thunder. I'm skipping some here, but Bad Boys, Crimson Tide, The Rock, Con Air, Armageddon, Enemy of the State, okay. Gone in 60 Seconds, wow. Remember the Titans, God, Pearl Harbor, like, boom, 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 just high-speed action. So I guess my main takeaway is that I just literally felt like I was in the plane for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when a movie can sort of make you feel that way. And I'm glad that I watched it for the first time in 35 years. Dex, what was your main takeaway?
I loved Goose. Goose was great. I'm a big Anthony Edwards guy, so you're kind of
a goose.
Yeah, I am totally the co-pilot. I am totally your wingman. That is my role if I would ever be allowed in the military. I am not flying that plane necessarily. I will guide you. I will help you. I love the relationship between Maverick and Goose. It was my favorite part.
Yeah, like it's sad when
it
Goose
tugged
dies,
at my heartstrings, man. It was tough.
Really,
it
got a little misty in the Mackie living room. Yeah.
Oh wow, I did too.
Didn't make me sad.
Well, that's because you're a
didn't bother
cold-hearted
it didn't, bother, it didn't bother me one bit.
Yeah,
didn't bother me one bit. Class clown dies. Okay,
I loved him.
Which character is Judd?
Ooh, which one is Judd? Are you who's the other? No, he wouldn't be him. I was going to say,
is
who's
he
the other
Wolfman?
Guy? Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
I don't know if I'd be Wolfman. A fighter pilot guy. I think I'd be an old guy.
No, he'd be the old command. Remember the clip at the beginning we played?
Ed Harris?
Was like, who? Yeah, you're Ed Harris.
Ed Harris
who's
is
up
great.
There? Great.
He's barely
Mackie
in the
and
film.
Declan.
He's barely in the film, and he's fantastic.
Yeah, he is good.
Tom Skerritt. Tom Skerritt is fan. Also, I love that guy.
That was Ed Harris?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he's in the start and the end, and that's it.
Really?
Yeah.
And everyone's sweating profusely
sure.
in that
I know.
Submarine.
I was going to ask, but here's the weird
sense,
thing. They only put sweat on some people. It's like if they're all going to sweat, have them sweat, but it's like character 2 and 3 sweating profusely.
Interesting.
Character
huh?
4 and 5 not sweating. It's very odd.
Okay, let me ask it this way. What would your fighter pilot name be? I have a couple for you guys.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I've never thought about this.
I think Dex. So we have Iceman. We've got Maverick. We've got Wolf or Wolfman or whatever. We've got Jester. We've got all these names, right? Viper. I think there was.
That's Tom Skerritt.
Yep.
Cougar.
Yeah, which is funny.
I think Dex. I think you're Seltzer.
Seltzer. Okay.
Corona hard seltzer.
Yeah, I get it.
Don't drink while you're flying the plane.
No,
right?
Well, yeah, no.
You get the endorsement while you're on the plane. That's good.
Maybe.
Yeah, there's Dex right there.
Love that.
I think Judd. I think Judd's panic. Oh God! Oh God! The plane. Something's wrong with the plane.
Yeah.
We can't get in the plane. Oh no!
Boy,
and then hurt something.
Eject! Just eject!
Trade these planes.
Just eject.
Tank for new planes.
When in doubt,
seltzer and panic.
Hit the eject button. No.
All right. What else? Let's go into the let's start with the Maverick and Charlotte dynamic.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Maverick when he and Charlie is short. Her name is Charlotte, and they call her Charlie in this movie.
Yep. All right.
I'm Charlotte Blackwood.
I'm Maverick.
Maverick? Does your mother not like you or something?
No, it's my call sign.
You're a pilot.
That's right, a naval aviator. No, actually, we've only done this twice.
Oh, how'd you do?
Crashed and burned on the first one. It wasn't pretty.
The second?
I don't know. I'll tell you tomorrow, but it's looking good so far.
I love when they bring that back at the end of the movie and they just play the same deal. So it doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't feel like maybe Declan can tell us because Declan's more immersed in dating culture than Judd and I are right now. But like, is that the way to get your gal? Just be super cocky and insufferably arrogant, and then she'll just fall for you. And
I don't think so. I don't. That's not how I go about it.
It might have been at the time.
Yeah. Seriously, I thought it was just
fighter
a
pilot?
weird relationship. I like at the beginning how she's like, "Oh, you're a fighter pilot." Tell me, even though she knows all about it, so she's like letting him tease her up about it, even though she knows as much about fighter pilots than he does. But the way he pursues her, this dude barely knows her. And follows her into the bathroom? Did you guys notice that at the bar? Like 5 minutes
cocky.
In.
But he's super cocky. Like that's a whole shtick.
All right.
He's like super, super cocky.
Obviously, things have changed as time progresses. But if someone who I just met, I would never, I don't care how bad I want her, I am not following her into the bathroom.
But you're not that cocky.
Also, the thing that he doesn't realize is, so she's in there doing her makeup.
Sure.
I mean, what if she had some spicy food before going to the bar?
Yikes.
What if
well,
he goes to the bathroom
then she's
and
in the
she's
stall.
In the stall? And
then it's just trumpets.
Then
he just walks in and walks out. That's it.
And the fact that she just like falls in love with him 2 days later, I mean, I guess the charm works, but it was just kind of weird. And also, again, I'm gonna nitpick this just like I did with Roadhouse. When they get down and dirty, their kissing scene is like the most uncomfortable thing. I think I'm just uncomfortable by kissing
it's
scenes.
It's like neither one of them has ever made out
no!
before.
Did you guys?
That's weird.
It's like a lizard. He's just like he's just like sticking out his tongue.
They were trying to shoot it in a different way too, which I didn't care about. Did you guys? I didn't sense, and this would translate from McGillis and Cruz. I didn't really get the impression there was much chemistry there.
Okay.
Like, I didn't feel a lot of chemistry. Like, I got the storyline, and I just didn't care. But you know how on some films, the actors, there's a dynamic of, oh, there's chemistry here? I never really felt that there was a ton of chemistry between those two, and I just didn't care that much.
I think part of it might be that Tom Cruise is an alien.
No, I think you're right, now in retrospect.
He's a weirdo.
Tom Cruise, and now that we know he's almost 60 years old, and we've seen him, 35 years since this movie came out, and we know that he's Scientology guy, and he's jump on the couch guy, and you watch him in some of these movies, and he's just he's so wired. It looks like he snorted the 50-yard line of cocaine before he gets into any scene.
His eyes are bugging out, you're right.
He's just he brings this over-the-top, crazy energy. Jerry Maguire, right? Everything he does is just super high-strung. And I don't know if you can build chemistry with people that way. He just kind of goes into the movie and he's going to be Tom Cruise, the Force, and just either hop on or get out of the way is sort of the vibe. So I don't know. I don't know that you're going to have
that's probably true.
The chemistry that
I just didn't sense it. I didn't.
You weren't feeling it?
I didn't really buy it.
Are you blaming him or her? Or it just wasn't a match?
I think it wasn't a match.
Yeah, it just didn't seem natural, man.
In retrospect, though, it probably was largely Cruise, because I think your synopsis of Tom Cruise as a person is exactly right, which it's good because the Maverick character actually fit his personality probably perfectly. It's just that when they tried to have the love scene or when those two were talking, I never thought to myself, I sure hope they kiss here because they seem like they should. I thought to myself, you know what? He should just get on his cycle and go home.
I also kind of wondered,
I'm okay with that.
Okay, she's very attractive. She is a woman with a powerful job. She meets a lot of men in the work that she does, and so of all the men that she could meet, either through the Naval Academy, or of all the men that she could meet just in life, why is she choosing this total arrogant? And I think most guys wonder that, right? I used to wonder that. Am I just too nice of a guy?
Yes.
And
the answer was yes, you were.
I wonder how many guys watched this movie and tried to use some of the lines in the late 80s. How many guys did the crash and burn line at a bar?
Or tried to sing.
And then how many guys were just super cocky? I'm going to be Tom Cruise when I go to the bar and just follow women into the bathroom.
Or tried to sing. I bet you a lot of guys tried to sing after that at bars.
Eyes.
Yes. I bet you that became a thing.
Well, you were, Dex wasn't born, and I was
I was 16 when the film came out, so I was pre-bars at that point in time, okay. Which is absolutely just fine.
Can you remember in all the movies you guys have ever watched, has anyone ever been cockier in a movie than Tom Cruise was in this movie? Is this the cockiest anyone has ever been in a movie?
I'm sure it's not, but I can't off the top of my head think of one.
I think he takes the belt. I think he takes the...
Because even like Daniel Craig and James Bond, it's not really a cockiness, because he has so much confidence, it's uber confidence. He doesn't come off as cocky necessarily.
Yeah, he comes off as just supremely sure of himself.
Yeah, and
Tom
cool.
Cruise comes off as overcompensating for some childhood issues in this movie. Or his character does, or maybe both.
Yeah,
I don't know. What about the Maverick Iceman dynamic? What did you guys, if you guys had to side with one of them or pick one of them?
I didn't recall the Val Kilmer Iceman role was actually much smaller than I recalled it being. He's in it, but he has minimal lines.
He's basically in it three times to call Tom Cruise dangerous.
Yes, and, right? and I had recalled him as being more cocky himself, and he is cocky, but he's not over the top, arrogant cocky. I'm honestly surprised that there wasn't more to it. In fact, I think, small net here, I think in retrospect, it would have been more fun to have more byplay between Iceman and Maverick than Maverick and his girlfriend. Because Val Kilmer, man, is a super weird guy too, but he's good. It would have been fun. And he's in it sort of just to sort of straighten Maverick out or attempt to, but it's not an in-depth role.
Yeah. And by the way, I remember the first time I ever saw Val Kilmer in a movie when I was a kid was when he was Batman, and he's mostly crapped on for being the worst Batman.
Yeah, it's not a good
Batman. I don't think he was as bad as people have thought.
Clooney was bad, right?
Clooney was worse, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's gotten ripped for that role.
I think it was worse.
Yeah. Okay. They kind of did those one-off Batmans, and then they landed on Christian Bale. A lot of people, just sort of reading some different
just things on Rotten Tomatoes and whatnot about this movie. A lot of people point out just how often, whether it's the Maverick and Iceman scenes or just in general, how many scenes involve half-naked men embracing each other and like having deep conversations wearing towels?
And like tidy whiteys.
And tidy whiteys.
An extreme tidy whiteys.
Cruise, man. Cruise was in those. Yes. Cruise was a constant, like, it's like, okay, put some shorts on, dude.
Well, this is like, Tom Cruise is like, you know, pun intended, he's taking on, like, his career, Risky Business in the early 80s, like 1982
or 3. Which also involved tidy whiteys.
Tom Cruise and tidy whiteys.
Him dancing.
And this is him just taking off as one of the biggest movie stars, if not the biggest movie star in the world.
Absolutely.
Was he, like, at this time, and you, like, again, you were alive, and you, like, Tom Cruise was, after this movie came out, Tom Cruise was the biggest movie star in the world, right? Is there anybody else? I mean, there were guys, like, older guys that were kind of coming down.
No, he was huge by then, yes.
Okay.
And he was what? I think he was about 24, 25.
Yeah.
So at that point in time, he's still basically a kid. But yeah, this probably... That film, Top Gun, probably put him over the top as far as establishing him as a hugely marketable action movie star.
Yeah.
That's probably fair to say.
Least favorite parts of this movie. Is there anything that you guys were like, I don't know.
Couple things.
Okay.
The volleyball scene. We could have omitted the volleyball scene.
I was thinking the same thing.
Because
it felt unnecessary.
I've never...
So 80s, you guys.
And I'm not trying to get like masculinity here, but I've never been like, all my dudes, let's go play some volleyball together and like also cheer on each other while we play volleyball.
In our jeans, by
In
the
our
way.
Jeans, well, by the way.
How about the last scene where they come back and they're all jumping around the plane, though, and it's just so like hokey. Yay! We won! We won!
What do you mean? Like they're celebrating.
But the whole film
took out enemy MiGs.
I know, but it's just, but it's like those scenes were hokey, but they were actually funny too.
But how would you go about? So you just took out some enemy MiGs. You just went through combat for the first time.
Yeah, and by the way, your graduation party is interrupted to say you guys got to get to work, and the first thing you got to do is go. Aren't there available veteran pilots at that point?
Yeah.
Like, congratulations, enjoy that 10th glass of champagne, and now go get some MiGs.
Also, it is
great.
The other gripe I have is who are the bogeys? Who are the bad guys?
Yeah,
who are they?
That's in my notes. The best part about that whole thing is. At that point in time, one statement to make. God, did we miss the Russians? Because that's at the point in time where I think the Ruskies weren't as bad of guys. And that might be the first film where they just bailed and they're like, there are no bad guys right now.
Okay.
Like there's no real terrorists at that point in time, right?
I was going to save this till toward the end here, but since you guys are bringing it up, have you guys read about
Declan's all right.
Like the origins of this movie and why it came about?
No.
So this movie was propaganda. This movie was U.S. government and military propaganda.
Okay.
It was a joint project with the U.S. Naval Academy to improve the perception of the Navy post-Vietnam. And I'm going to read you this write-up from, okay. I wish I could cite the website, but there's a million websites if you just Google this. So the late Cold War classic Top Gun is one of the most well-liked military movies of all time. Its combination of romance, comedy, and never-seen-before aerial action was made possible by extensive support from the Department of Defense, particularly the U.S. Navy. It's credited with significantly boosting military recruitment, but it also had another mission. The Department of Defense's database on its collaborations with Hollywood says the film clearly portrayed the Navy in a very positive light, but it's the next comment that bothers this writer. The entry goes on. Film completed rehabilitation of the military's image, which had been savaged by the Vietnam War a decade and a half prior.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because Vietnam
it was a disaster.
Was like less than 15 years before it had ended.
Yep. Ended 74-ish, right?
And so how do you guys feel like this type of thing probably happens more often than we think where... And if you go down the YouTube rabbit hole, by the way, if you want to go down like the QAnon rabbit hole, like there's way more where this came from, but this actually didn't come from QAnon, just to clarify. This is like a well-known thing that the United States military wanted to get.
So the scenes were so good because they actually helped out.
In fact,
okay.
A note on that. So the Navy made several aircraft from F-14 Fighter Squadron VF-51 Screaming Eagles available for the film. So the Naval Academy said, hey, you guys want to borrow some of our planes to film in the air and do this? So Paramount Pictures paid as much as $7,800 per hour for fuel and other operating costs whenever aircraft were flown outside their normal duties. Shots of the aircraft carrier sequences were filmed aboard the USS Enterprise, showing aircraft from F-14 squadrons, Aardvarks, Black Lions, and others. The majority of the carrier flight deck shots were of normal aircraft operations, and the film crew had to take what they could get, save for the occasional flyby, which the film crew would request. So they wound up paying just tens of thousands of dollars and just essentially like renting out these planes and pilots to film these scenes.
Okay.
So how does it make you guys feel that this is one of the greatest action movies of all time? It's also one of the greatest United States propaganda attempts and successful attempts of all time, too, to change the perception of the military. You feel duped?
I had that's awesome. No, yeah, that's great. Are you kidding?
That's great.
I had no clue. That's really, really cool.
Also, so, bomber jacket sales increased, and Ray-Ban aviator sunglasses jumped 40% due to their use of by characters
aviators
in the film here.
Not shock me.
There had to be a ton of kids at that time who signed up to become pilots, right?
Yeah, well, think about that. So Desert Storm, when did Desert Storm start?
91-ish.
That was the 90s.
So Desert Storm started like five years after this. You probably had a bunch of like 17, 16, 17, 15-year-old dudes that watched this movie in 1986.
Weird guys like, at Pinell that were like, this is the greatest thing.
Yeah.
And wow, I didn't know that though. That's a great deep dive. I love that fact.
It's crazy.
So why didn't we, but to Dex's point, is there an explanation about why we didn't pick a bad guy?
I don't know.
Do we just not care? I haven't. Just somebody.
There might be an answer if somebody knows. You know, send us a tweet at Phil Mackey, at Jay Zolgat, at Dex's tweets. But my gut, just after reading all of the details about how the first mission was, well, it's two missions. One, let's make a kick-ass movie that makes $350 million at the box office and make people rich. And then the second mission is let's put the U.S. military and Naval Academy in a positive light. Is it possible that they didn't want the movie to center around like taking out an opponent?
Like there is no bad guy.
Right, which we're going to get
for the first time in this exercise, there is no bad guy.
Right, we will get to the bad guy rankings and figure out what to do, but I think they just wanted it to be about putting
That makes sense.
Putting the military in a positive light. And when the movie ends, you know, you're kind of like, let's go kick some ass.
They're all
let's
jumping around the plane. They're all like, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hey, where's the cake and cookies?
America.
We won. I don't know what we won, but we won.
My best friend is dead, but I'm back now. We're good.
Okay. So here's my, I don't know if this is a gripe because I truly don't care because this was candy, basically. So like, this is not a breakdown film of where, oh man, I can't believe this. But I got a question for you guys. So Maverick, Tom Cruise, is this unbelievably cocky guy, right? Like beyond cocky. And in fact, perhaps the most cocky person individually that we will cover in this entire review of action films. All right.
Unless we do Rocky III.
Okay.
Mr. T's up there too.
I do love it. Yes. Yeah, but he's sort of a bad guy.
He's very much a bad guy.
This is the good guy. And so
it's like to be with a real man.
And so like he's making all of these moves that are, as Iceman says, reckless and dangerous and blah, blah, blah. All right. So to summarize here quickly, he has to eject with his best pal from a plane that crashes through no fault of Maverick's. Like the plane malfunctions. It's unfortunate.
Yep.
In ejecting and what transpires, Goose dies. All right. So let me get this straight. This unbelievably cocky pilot who does things that could kill people at any time does something that is totally not his fault and saves himself and his friend dies. And yet he is so upset about this, he almost quits flying.
Yeah.
I don't get that one.
I already explained this, but continue.
So here's why I don't get that one. If he had killed him, I could see him changing his ways, but he didn't kill him.
No, you're all right.
Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't be upset about it. I am saying I don't think that would cause him to quit.
Okay, so I explained earlier the difference between having true self-belief versus being over the top cocky and arrogant and covering up for deficiencies or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise, nobody is that cocky without it being rooted in insecurity or some other issue. And so when you're overcompensating for insecurity, which is what he's doing in this movie, you're ripe for something to throw you off your game. And that's how I interpreted it. That, like, he's putting on this front, but, like, deep down, he's kind of lonely. He's wondering what happened to his dad. Like,
which Tom Skerritt tells him in like 2 seconds. I love that scene. Yeah, he died, but he was good. Okay, thanks.
He's great. And if you ever need better. If you need a wingman up there, I'll come fly with you. Right? Great.
I love that scene because that scene itself was so ultimately not satisfying.
Yeah.
But I loved it because it just is like, okay, he died. He was really good though.
I think what you're seeing here, all right, this is the deepest we've ever gone into human psychology in Action Movie Rewind, okay?
Let's go.
I think what you're seeing throughout the movie is you're seeing a transition from false bravado and hollow confidence to a man who kind of hits rock bottom because he didn't have a solid core of like support and self-belief. It was all a front. And through his friend dying and through his relationship with Charlie, he starts to develop actual self-belief and starts to feel more whole. And then he operates from a place of actual self-belief by the end of the movie.
Wow, that's really deep for something that I thought this guy was just a complete
pretty good
a-hole. But yeah,
pretty good.
This is Goose dying, by the way.
Mayday, mayday. Mav's in trouble. He's in a flat spin. He's heading out to sea. Altitude 8,000. 7,000. Shit, we're in sick, man. Take forward, Goose. I can't reach the ejection handle.
You gotta let him go, sir.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Tugs at the heartstrings.
Well, it doesn't bother me one bit at all. It's so funny. It's so funny. It's so funny that I was like, okay, get him out.
Let's get Judd's a sociopath. Yeah.
Get him out.
That's why we love him.
Yes. Get him out.
Okay, the end scene when we finally get to the end scene and you've got the two enemy planes that turns into five enemy planes, which I'm wondering, all right, who's in charge of like trying to spot like where the enemy is and how do you underestimate by that much?
God.
So they send Iceman up. They send I think they sent two planes up, including Iceman, and then Maverick was on standby.
Yes.
It was Wolfman and Iceman that got sent up, or Wolf or whatever. And then Maverick was on standby, and Iceman was a little bit, he pulled the instructor aside and was like, I don't know, Maverick seems like he's kind of psyched out.
It's nothing personal, sir.
Yep.
It's not personal.
Is Maverick the right guy? And so Maverick gets called on to go up and help, and he disengages at first out of sort of fear, and then he looks at the dog tags of Goose, and he says, talk to me, Goose.
Talk to me, Goose.
Yeah. Talk to me, Goose.
Which, I mean, we all have time. Guys are trying to shoot you down. You're going warp speed. We all have time to take a little bit of a look at our friend's dog tags, don't we?
For sure. Absolutely.
Talk to me, Goose.
Yeah. And then he goes into his Hulk Hogan comeback mode, or his Rocky Balboa comeback mode.
Yes.
Including slamming on his patented move, slamming on the brakes to let the enemy plane fly by. And then, boom, he gets a target. What a genius move. You guys ever do that on the freeway when someone's riding your ass? Just move over, slam on the brakes, and then... And is that just me?
And then shoot them down and then blow their car
and then
up?
Pull out a missile.
And then
yeah.
Blow them up? Yeah, of course yep. I do. Why not?
And then by the end, he gains Iceman's respect. And then we go into the love story and whatnot. So what did you think about the way this movie ended? Would you have changed anything about the way this movie ended?
No, because it was glorious that it was just done. Like, it was all done so quickly. I guess this is one film, much like the Seagal films, where you know what you're getting into, and so you don't really have this, well, they should have done this, or, you know, like, why didn't we see that? No, I thought it was absolutely fine, and I also think that they just had it has to be done by then, we don't care how, we're going to win a fictional battle against bad guys who we're not even going to tell you who the bad guy is. I thought it was absolutely fine.
I don't think I can change it. I think it works out really, really well. I kind of think, what would happen if Goose didn't die? Then how does the movie play out? Like, does...
But it's no good then. Cause
right. I think Goose has to die for Maverick to take steps forward.
Mm-hmm.
If Goose doesn't die, Maverick's just, like, still this cocky a-hole, right?
Yeah, it doesn't change.
The sequel is coming out, finally, after 35 years in early 2021.
July of next year, according to what I read.
Okay.
Val Kilmer back, Tom Cruise back, I believe, as an instructor.
Did Val Kilmer get in shape for this?
Kelly McGillis not back.
Okay.
She's not coming back for it.
That's too bad.
My guess is no. My guess is he did not. I don't think he cares anymore. And you know what? God bless him for
Miles Teller is supposed to be in it. Jennifer Connelly. Wow, there's this.
John Hamm.
It's going to be a great cast.
John Hamm is going to be.
John Hamm?
Yes. Oh, it's going to be must-see.
Wow.
I'll be there for it.
I'm there for it too, man.
I'm ready for it too.
Some amazing quotes in this movie.
Oh, son. Your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
This is what I call a target-rich environment, walking into a bar with several women.
Yes.
It's a great one.
Yes.
You live your life between your legs, Mav. It's another one.
It's a good one.
Yep.
On the first date, I crashed and burned. We heard that one. I did like when Iceman finally says, you can be my wingman anytime. BS, we already played that clip. And then I got a little bit of the feels when Viper told Maverick, if you don't have a partner, I'll fly with you. He wound up not flying with him, I don't think. But
no, he didn't.
It's a good gesture. What else? What else from this movie before we get to the
I would like to see. So I would like to see, because I think it would be perfect, Dex grow the goose mustache.
I mean, if I could grow that mustache, I shave like every third day because I can only
just
grow
let
whiskers,
it grow, though.
Dude. It looks horrible.
No,
it,
but that's the point.
It enhances my...
Goose look terrible, too. That's the point.
Brutal mustache.
Yeah,
but that's what I want.
Yeah. I have to shave.
Come on, man. You love Goose. Do it for Goose.
I love Goose. I love Anthony Edwards, but I
Anthony
can't
Edwards.
It. Dr. Green on ER, that's one of my favorite shows of my mom, man. I used to watch it all the
Bald
time.
Bald by then, though, at least.
Is Anthony Edwards more famous for ER or for Top Gun?
I think for ER.
Probably ER.
I think for ER, to be completely honest.
And they killed him on that, too.
Yep.
Brain tumor on that one.
Yeah, that's
spoiler alert. God.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
In case you haven't seen that show from 20 years.
20 years ago. I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize.
It hits me in the feels.
All right, the definitive. Well, actually, just real quick, who is your favorite character in this movie? Dex said Goose.
It's Goose. That's
you know what? I'm going to go with Tom Skerritt, Viper.
Okay,
I love because he had a very small role, but he's great. He is a no BS actor, and like his role was small, but the importance of the character was actually large.
Sure,
I thought he was incredibly effective in what was probably. A day of shooting, you think? A couple days of shooting? Like, there couldn't have been that much that he actually had to do.
Yeah. I'm going to say Iceman, mostly because of that thing he did with his teeth halfway through the movie. You guys remember that? Where he gets in
he gets in
Maverick's face and he goes,
I have new teeth. He goes, I can't do it.
He goes,
yeah. Yeah. Freaks me out.
Yeah.
So you bring up a point, and I don't know if I'm the only one that noticed this or not. Did we get more teeth shots than we ordinarily do? Like, Tom Cruise had beautiful teeth.
He does.
Kilmer had great teeth. It felt
like Charlie.
Great teeth.
Yeah,
but it
felt like there were actually camera shots where they said, open your mouth as wide as possible because we want to focus on your teeth. Like, I just felt like there were teeth shots.
I mean,
it might be
I guess
me.
I'd have to go back and see.
I felt like we got Cruise's teeth a lot, and they're good teeth.
I'm going through Val Kilmer's IMDb page here just to see, like, what has he done?
He's great.
He's actually done a lot more recently than I would have thought.
He's crazy, but he's really, really good.
So his run there for a while, this was only the third movie he was ever in. His first movie was Top Secret in 1984, Real Genius.
I remember Real Genius, yeah.
He was in Willow, that sort of Fantasyland movie from 1988.
That one I don't remember.
He played Jim Morrison in The Doors in 1991.
That was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Tombstone, he was Doc Holliday, that's right. He also played Elvis in True Romance in 1993, Batman Forever, then 1995. He was in Heat. He had a run.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he was huge.
Him,
huge box office star.
And then he got fat.
He did
much,
put
right?
on some pounds.
Can we back off of him for that?
He gained some weight.
I mean, okay, that happens. Perhaps there was a pandemic that we forgot about.
Maybe.
In 1999. All right.
It was the late 90s. There could have been a lot of things, dude.
The definitive bad guy rankings. All right. So before we dive into this, because this is complicated, Hans Gruber from Die Hard, Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Brad Wesley from Roadhouse, Cobra Kai from Karate Kid, Mr. Joshua from Lethal Weapon are the top five. The bottom five are the incompetent Russian military from Rambo 3, the muggers from Death Wish, the French drug lord from Bad Boys, Gans and Billy Bear from 48 Hours, and Sloan from Wanted. There really is no bad guy in this movie. So do we come up with some other bad guy? Like, is there...
No.
Like, who is the antagonist, or what is the antagonist in this movie? Is it...
It's not Iceman.
I almost feel like it's Maverick.
Well, it's him against himself.
It's like Maverick's battle against himself.
But that's not a bad guy. I think it's a vacated title. I just don't think there is one.
So it's either not applicable or it's Maverick's.
I don't think it's applicable.
It's Maverick's dark side.
Yeah, but I mean,
the bogeys. We don't know who the bogeys are.
No, that's the point. I would prefer that we vacate the title on this one because there's just no bad guy.
Wow.
Like, Mav's dark side is, yeah, but I mean, that's.
All right.
Is that a bad guy?
I guess for the first time, this is an unprecedented moment in Action Movie Rewind. There's just no
bad guy. But I mean, think about this, guys. This film, rightfully so, made millions upon millions of dollars with no bad guy. Think about that. Like, everything has a bad guy.
No, that's not true. There's a lot of, like, self-struggle movies out there.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm saying every movie that is in the genre of what we're doing on this has a bad guy. We've tortured Russians after we liked them into being bad guys in different films.
Yeah. But this movie's better because there wasn't a bad guy. I think it's better because Tom Cruise was just fighting Tom Cruise.
Propaganda.
Yeah. Yep.
That propaganda thing to me, I had no clue. That is so intriguing.
Yeah. It actually makes you wonder, like, what other movies are propaganda?
So how does that work then?
Rocky IV was probably propaganda.
So do you start to write that film and involve the military and they're like, hey, this could help us? Or do they get involved?
I think I had read that the military approached, like, a movie studio or had approached Bruckheimer or something. Like,
wow.
That it was initiated by
That's
the military.
Evil genius almost in some ways. I love that.
And come up with a soundtrack and like just make people love us. All right, cool. What's our budget? $15 million. And we'll give you some planes, I guess. The 1 through 10 Seagal rating system. So the best movies we have reviewed so far, Die Hard, John Wick. Die Hard's the only 10. John Wick, 9.3. Commando, 9.2. The Fast and the Furious, 8.8. The Expendables, 8.8. Roadhouse, Hard to Kill, Rocky IV, Bad Boys, Independence Day, and Point Break also at an 8 or above. At the bottom, Bloodsport, Wanted, Rambo 3, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, Air Force 1, and 48 Hours. And there's a bunch in the middle, too.
Air Force 1, how do we do that?
And our criteria here is...
I feel like we botched that one.
Our criteria is sort of like, how iconic is the movie? There's got to be a combination of it has to be a little bit campy and corny. It can't just be like an amazing movie. There's got to be enough of a corny factor. So what would you guys say? Top Gun, 1 through 10, Seagal ranking system.
I'll go 7. I think it's a solid 7.
Whoa, dude.
That's low.
What?
I think it's a 7? I think it's a 7.
Yeah.
The lack of the bad guy, I think, does hurt it. It's a good movie.
What are you doing?
It's a 7 out of 10. It's not bad. It's a 7.
I love when Mackie gives you the what are you doing.
Are you
that means
me?
You really bleeped up.
What? It's just a 7. It's a fine movie. It's well-paced.
Oh,
it's a 7.
Dex, you're not considering the time. You're not considering the time period. We got tricked by the military. Give them credit for
that. 7. It's a 7.
All right, okay.
You guys can go higher.
It's a 10. It's a 10.
Okay.
If I could give it a rating above, I regret giving Die Hard a 10. I should have reserved a 10 for this movie. This is the best action movie.
You were right.
It's a 10.
It is a 9 for me.
Okay.
It's a 9. It's a very solid 9. And I do praise the fact that I'm giving a 9 to a film that, as Dex said, did not have a bad guy, which to me, I would have never thought that I would praise a film that had MiGs, and I don't know who was flying the MiGs. But I'm giving it an incredibly solid 9 for the time period, the soundtrack, a lot to like.
It's a 7.
All right.
So
I mean, that's fine. That's how this works. Okay.
So with that, it is an 8.7 composite score, which leaves it outside the top 5. So Die Hard, John Wick, Commando, Fast and the Furious, The Expendables, and then Top Gun rated 6th for us in Action Movie Rewind. So, all right.
Little asterisk by this.
Dex would have started at an 8.
I'm actually more disappointed that Bloodsport is still last.
Oh,
than
it should.
I am that Top
Phil,
Gun
it was crap.
Is 6.
It was the fact that this feature survived.
Wait, it had a bad guy. What
being
do you mean?
Its first film is a miracle.
Oh, it had a bad guy. I don't know what you want. You guys want bad guys? You guys can't watch a movie unless there's a bad guy.
Well, I need
what
a
action
bad
movie.
No,
no. Who the boogeyman?
Yeah,
no.
I'm saying I'm praising Top Gun. It didn't have a bad guy, and I still gave it a 9.
Who the boogeyman?
I still gave it a 9.
All right.
Do you know what that film? That film was begging for Keanu Reeves. He was just a little bit too young, probably. Yeah, at the time.
Top Gun?
Little young.
Yes, he would have been great in Top Gun.
Can you imagine if he was the wolf or wolfman or whatever?
Like, but he would have been perfect, right?
Yeah.
Like the ice cold stares.
I would have been there for it.
Hey, you're not a good guy. I don't like you.
What about Dolph Lundgren as like another country's airman?
Oh, then Dex gives it a 10. Then, huh? You see that? It gets a 10 from Declan.
So, wait, so.
It would have been Russian.
So, Dex, let me just get this straight. Okay. So, what you're saying is if they had shown, even for 10 seconds, Dolph Lundgren flying an enemy MiG.
10.
You would have given this an 8 or a 9 or a 10.
100%.
There's no question 100%. About that. He's not mincing words. Like, Dex is not confused as to why this did not get a 10.
Oh, that's amazing. All right. So that's Top Gun. That's the first time that Dex and I have ever watched Top Gun. And I believe it's Declan's turn to pick the next action movie here.
All right. So we are going to stick in the 80s.
Love it.
We are going to go with a Goff family classic, and I'm actually really kicking myself that I didn't pick this earlier. It's technically a sequel. We have not reviewed the original, but I think the second one plays more into what we want to do here on Action Movie Rewind. So we are going to go to 1981, runtime of 96 minutes. We're going with Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior.
Wow.
Mad Max 2.
I have never seen any of these Mad Max movies.
Really?
The Road Warrior?
The Road Warrior. You don't have to see the first one. I really to get the second one. And if you really want to, I can give you the quick like analysis of what the first one is, but it really has nothing to do with too much of the second one.
How about we can do our own homework on the first one. I might watch the first one just to get a feel for it.
Okay.
But
and that one's also like 90 minutes, so both of them are quick.
Mad Max 2, The Mel Road Gibson. Warrior for next week. That's early Mel Gibson right there.
81, okay, cool. 81. Awesome.
96 minutes.
Nice.
All right, there it is.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime. Bull you can be mine. Yeah!
All right, Patrick Royce. We wrap with Royce every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday on Mackie and Judd. You can also find Royce Unchained in podcast form on Apple, Spotify, and ScoreNorth.com. So, Pat, this is, I know, one of the biggest fights you and I ever had on our old show, Royce and Mackie, was when they instituted the new wild card that's been in play for like 6 years. And so now they have 8 playoff teams. Going into the final 3 days of the regular season, in the National League, only 4 teams have clinched a playoff spot. There are 8 teams alive with 4 spots available. So buckle up in the National League this weekend, everybody.
You think it'll be that way over a 162-game season instead of a 60-game
season?
No,
absolutely not. It will not.
I can accept it with this weird season we're having, 60 games. But you can't play 162 games and eliminate less than 50% of your teams and think that people should go buy tickets to regular season games. You're going to have 14 people showing up in September if I can do anything to prevent them from going. I will write anything I can saying, don't go to a game. They're ripping you off. They're thieves.
What do you mean? You don't think? But what? You got the Colorado Rockies are 25-31, and they still have mathematical hope going into the final week of the season.
Okay, that's fine with a 60-game season, and we don't know because you know over a 60-game season, basically you're not going to have a legitimate winner anyway. So we might as well turn it into a tournament, an NHL type playoff because it's more NHL type than NBA type because in NBA the best team wins because you play to 100. But in baseball and hockey, you can whoever best of three, anybody can win it. So I don't have any fine whatever we're going to do to the pandemic. That's fine. I don't care. But, I don't like the rosters that are this top heavy with pitchers. I don't like the fact nobody's hitting. But we got to accept what we got here this year. And, it's kind of fun now to try to figure out who you're going to play at the end of the season. But I would think that over a 162-game schedule, they would spread themselves out even more. And instead of having that nice fight for the last playoff spot, you would have some team 73-89 fighting for a playoff spot, and I cannot accept that.
If you're the Twins, who do you want then, Pat? starting Tuesday.
Well, I thought I wanted Houston until they got 12 hits and 10 runs off Lance Lynn in five innings last night, and everybody they had got hits. I mean, Bregman had a great game, and he's had a bad year. And, you know, if Houston, yeah, that's the trouble with this. You know, a week ago, who didn't you want? I hope we don't see those White Sox again, damn it. And since then, they're, what, 1-6? And, you know, the Cubs, you go there, you see them pitch on Friday, and you say, oh, man, they haven't had a hit since. They just lost 3 out of 4 to Pittsburgh. In this, you know, goofy season, you don't know who you want. You know, the only thing I know that I didn't want was the Yankees at in the Bronx. And that can happen now. So it's been a good week. No matter what happens, you don't have to play the Yankees in the Bronx. So that's okay. But I don't know. I'm not excited about playing Cleveland and having to win game one against Shane Bieber, are you?
No, that's the one, like, of all the possibilities, I would just prefer to avoid that. And it looks like there's a, maybe even a better chance if the Twins win the division, there might even be a better chance that the Twins play Chicago as the 7 seed if they keep this weekend.
Yeah, they're only, what, I don't know the Cleveland White Sox tiebreaker. I don't know what that is, but they're only one game behind them. The White Sox go play the Cubs, and remember, a week ago, that was a World Series preview. They were saying, what happens if you get a Cubs-White Sox World Series and it's played in Texas?
Yeah.
I heard them talking about that. I don't think we got to worry about it. The one team can't hit, and I don't know what happened to the way he just went to take. So
they choked.
There was not much to choke about. I don't know what happened to them. Issue number one for the Twins this weekend, you know, they've been so much better at Target Field for no reason. You know, you want them to be at home, but they got to start hitting. You cannot run a lineup out there as pathetic as they've been hitting and expect to do anything. They got to start hitting. They got to get Cruz back. Sano's got to, you know, been sent in for electric shock therapy or something and get going again, you know, a little bit. I mean, you can't, this lineup is god awful. And they got to, you know, Kepler showed a little sign of life. And, you know, when you look at this lineup now, you're not even upset when Jake Cave's in it anymore. Hey, good. Jake's coming up. He's got a better chance than 80% of these butts. So, you know, they got to start hitting. You know, it's not going to last long. And I also think the guy that's pitching tonight has got to be, you know, he's got to be an ace. And I'm not saying a Verlander ace or a Garrett Cole ace, but he's got to be. Rios has got to give you 6 innings and 2 runs.
Yeah.
He's got to be capable of doing that.
And Pat, you know, on that front, like, if not now for him, when? The time is now for him to do that. He's not 21 years old anymore.
No, and he should not be the nervous, obviously easily rattled guy who's all of a sudden becomes a shirt version of Kyle Gibson and won't challenge anybody. And I think part of the problem with all of them, though, is in the modern pitching, everything that gets hit is a mistake, right? You gotta pitch around every, in the idea of throwing it over and somebody might hit it, and that's okay, is gone. They want these guys to challenge guys, but not throw any bad pitches, We want you to challenge guys, throw it in the strike zone, but don't give up any doubles. You know, I mean, it's they have put so much pressure on these guys, I think, to make the perfect pitch, and then we got to take 25 seconds to figure out what's the next pitch going to be. That's the one thing Romo's got going for him. He doesn't have to think what his next pitch is going to be. He just throws the slider. But I don't know. Approach to pitching, I think, is kind of blowing Barrios' mind. He's so worried about throwing a bad pitch that he just doesn't throw it over. So he's been pretty good lately, though, which is, they really need that badly. I have no problem with the Japanese. Maeda is fine, and And Pineda, I think Pineda will give you a 5 1/3, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he definitely can.
He'll throw it over. He said he's going to. So they're going in with, when's the last time they went in with three starters this good? You know, this good, but that you could have this much confidence.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Hey, do you put Rich Hill in the bullpen in that first round, or do you not have him on the roster in that first round?
Don't know. Does he have to warm up for long?
That's what we've been talking about.
I'd get him in the bullpen.
An hour and a half.
Stretching out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Start him at 9 in the morning and tell him he's going to come in the 6th.
Nah, I don't, you know, I suppose it would hurt his feelings, but, you know, I don't think I have Oda Rizzi or him on the, for this round, do you? I suppose, who's going to pitch Sunday, Homer, or are they going to start Oda Rizzi, right?
Hill is scheduled to start the last I saw, but I don't know he's going to. He's just on list.
I bet you see all three of those guys on Sunday, right? Bailey and Oda Rizzi. But this idea that Jake Oda Rizzi, you're going to break him out sometime. I wouldn't have Oda Rizzi or Hill on. I'd just have some of these other arms. You know who could be the savior the way he's pitched the last 3-4 times? Cody Stasiak. He's given them that other arm in the bullpen that they've been missing all year. Sometimes they've been missing the main arm in the bullpen, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's our fright level about Taylor Rogers?
Mine is very high. In fact, I even told these guys this week, I actually trust Jorge Alcala in those situations more than I trust Taylor Rogers right now. And maybe, you know, like, I think if we can just acknowledge, for whatever the reason, whether it's just a weird year, Taylor Rogers is just a lot more hittable this year than he's been the last couple years. And so, like, again, feelings don't have to matter here. This is all about winning a World Series. And if it means that he has to move to a different spot in the pecking order and face lefties or something, like I don't think they should cling to Taylor Rogers in these high-pressure spots because that's the way they've done it the last couple years, if he's just more hittable, Pat.
And I don't think it's mental with him because I think he's probably still got some confidence in himself, but he's not throwing good pitches. You know, the slider isn't biting. The other night when Miguel comes up, Cabrera, and you're saying, okay, these dummies are going to pitch to him. Don't throw him anything that he can hit to right field, right? You know he's just wants to do – he's been killing them until the other night when he hit 2 long home runs, to his power side. But you come up, you say, okay, you got to put it on his fist because otherwise he's just going to serve it to right field. And Rogers throws him a pitch in the middle of the plate. And he hits it to right field. So I don't know. It's not only location, though. There's that, no matter what people are saying, there's not as much life on that slider. I know. It just doesn't have the bite on it. So meanwhile, the last week has been fantastic for these guys, hasn't it? With the Yankees going.
Yep.
Here's a great stat for you guys. The second tiebreaker, the Twins and the Yankees now end up with the same American League record, 23-17, right? So you have to go, because the Yankees lost 3 out of 4 to Toronto. So now you have to go to the next tiebreaker. The next tiebreaker is the last 20 games in the American League. Did you just know that?
Yes.
The next tiebreaker.
Yes.
The Twins are 12-8 in the last 20. The Yankees are 11-9 in the last 20 with a 10-game winning streak. They're 11-9, and in that period, they had a 10-game winning streak.
That's amazing.
That's mathematically impossible.
That is amazing. Well, Pat, it'll be fun. The next time we talk to you, we will be talking about whoever the Twins are playing in the actual playoffs. So,
and I want to mention one thing. I was surprised to see Mark Gregg, the wise old owl, who gave us both Green Bay and Indianapolis as wins over the Vikings, has picked the Vikings to win on Sunday.
Yep.
And he's not a homer. He never does. But he usually breaks it down pretty good. So maybe the boys won't go out and embarrass themselves.
Well, if there is going to be any sort of a pulse, they'll win this game on Sunday. Like,
with no cornerbacks, basically.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
All right,
Pat.
See you
next week, man.
Yeah.
All right, that's Patrick Royce, the legendary Patrick Royce, friend of the show here. And Vikings vent line is going to be win or lose, rocking and rolling on Score North Twitter, Facebook, and also youtube.com/purpledailypodcast right after that game is over on Sunday.
Where do you think Chansey's calling from this week? We had a horse carriage.
I'm going to say a hot tub. I think he'll be in a hot tub.
Do you think he's at home or traveling again?
I need Bob. I want to hear Bob.
But he could be traveling.
Yeah, we got to get Bob. Bob in a hot tub with the visual would be the next step.
Bob might be really, really down, though. I mean, Bob takes wins hard sometimes if the wind doesn't come the right way.
Bob in Pennsylvania, if you're listening, please send us a note. Email us at VikingsVentline@gmail.com, and we want you on the show from the hot tub. All right, that sounded creepy. We'll see you guys later.